this part of the show. It's something I've really wanted to talk with you about. I've made the announcement about this a number of times over the last few weeks. And this is about the fact that on November 15th, there's going to be a historic dialogue between Cornel West and Bob Avakian, live and in person, in Riverside Church in New York. And the dialogue is Revolution and Religion, the Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. And joining us today will be some three members of the host committee for this dialogue. And they are Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and Stop Mass Incarceration Network, David Zeiger, the filmmaker whose films include Sir, No Sir, and the TV series Senior Year, which just had its 15th anniversary, I think, and Saskia Sassen, who's the Robert S. Lind Professor of Sociology and co-chair of the Committee on Global Thought at Columbia University. We're going to be talking with the three of these folks, but before we do, I have a very special announcement, an invitation from Cornel West to the dialogue between him and Bob Avakian at Riverside Church in New York City. All right, so I want you to hear that, and then we'll be right back.
I want to encourage you to come to this rich dialogue between myself and my very dear brother, Bob Avakian. You're going to have a revolutionary Christian. You're going to have a revolutionary communist. We're going to be wrestling with the issues of religion and revolution. You're going to hear agreement and disagreement. You're going to hear transgression and convergence. But most importantly, you're going to hear two brothers who are for real focusing on those friends for known called the wretched of the earth, how we can resist, how we can be resilient, how we can move toward fundamental social change.
All right, welcome back. That was Cornel West with a special invitation to this dialogue, right? And for people who are in L.A., I just want you to know that there's going to be a simulcast in Los Angeles, and the place is will be announced. I'll probably have the info on it next week. The doors will open at 11 a.m. It'll begin at noon, and you can call Revolution Books, all right? And we'll have the number for that for you a little bit later, all right? Revolution Books in Hollywood, but check that out. All right, I'm pleased to welcome my guest today, and we're going to begin this by we'll be talking with all three guests, but I want to bring Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and the Stop Mass Incarceration Network on the air first. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on again, Michael.
Sure. It's good to talk to you, man, especially about this, because I've been waiting to talk to people about this for quite some time, all right? And getting the word out big and broad around all over the country about this. So, Carl, tell people what this dialogue is.
I mean, what this dialogue is it's going to be a high-level, substantive interaction between two dynamic leaders over a very timely and very big question in society for hundreds of millions of people around the world. I mean, just starting with that question of who these people are, and I know both of these brothers. I've had deep conversation with both Cornel West and Bob Avakian. I've worked with them around building resistance and how to bring to people an understanding of what the problems are, and I know how deeply they get into things and the intellectual integrity and mutual respect they bring to conversation. So to see these two people coming from different perspectives, as Cornel said, a revolutionary communist in Bob Avakian, a revolutionary Christian in Cornel, but dialoguing and getting into some of the things that they agree about and exploring areas of disagreement, I am eagerly anticipating this because, let me tell you, it's going to be electrifying.
Well, when you talk about that you know both of these people and you've had a deep discussion and intimate discussion with them, you know, tell me a little bit about the impact of these two, because these two people also, as I understand it, have had a big impact on your life.
Let me just start with Bob Avakian. I mean, and I go back 40 years ago, I think it was, that I had my first in-depth discussion with him. And I came into this discussion sharply disagreeing with him. There were sharp questions up in the revolutionary movement over what was the road forward. And he was arguing for one road, and I was arguing for another. And we had a chance encounter. We began to discuss, starting out from a position of arguing. But then as we got a couple hours into it, I began to realize, like, we're both revolutionaries. We're trying to get rid of these horrors and bring into being a world without exploitation and oppression, but he's coming at it different than I am. He's coming at it from that future world we're trying to bring into being, and then trying to figure out from here how we get there. and I was more stuck in the contradictions, divisions, and other things about today. And we ended up not getting any sleep that night because we spent the whole night discussing. And I came out of that with a changed perspective. And that's a role that Avakian has played, you know, throughout my adult life as a revolutionary. And I really want people to be there to hear what this revolutionary leader has got to say, because he's the architect of a whole new framework for the emancipation of humanity. And I want people to experience what's been the inspiration and the guidance for all the work that I've been doing over these decades. I want people to have a chance to experience that. So I really want them to be there. You know, and with Cornell, I only go back about two decades, but that's a pretty good time. And I've dialogued with him, shared public stages. I've shared jail cells with him. You know, we've initiated important work to take on stop and frisk, to take on mass incarceration. And this is a brother who's as at home getting into jazz and rhythm and blues as he is talking about philosophy or world history. And he goes at everything very deeply, but he has the same, this is something that he really shares with Avakian, they have an approach of mutual respect with people they're talking with. You know, you can be disagreeing with them, arguing with them, but they're actually listening to what you have to say, evaluating it, and responding to it in its best light, not looking for, oh, there's a weakness I can pull to get the leg up on this person, but no, let's get into this. I think this person is wrong on this. Let me try to show them why they're wrong. But also let me learn from what they're saying and seeing whether there's some things that are correct that I need to incorporate into my approach to stuff. That's why I think this is going to be both electrifying and refreshing. Mm-hmm. Because you don't often see that kind of exchange. You more see disagreements that bring out heat rather than light, that don't, you know, enlighten people about what the issues are and how to look at them, but more somebody trying to up one another or down the other person. This is going to be totally different than that, and I think people will really be delighted, moved, and challenged by it.
We'll call just one real quick question, and then we're going to bring in our other guests. But okay. What would you say, very quickly, if you can, what would you say, I mean, listening to it, I'm very inspired about it, but I'm also going to ask you this. What would you say, if you had to tell somebody, what's the heart of this dialogue?
I guess I think the heart of this dialogue has to do with getting people to think deeply, to critically assess things, and to reflect on what kind of people we need to be and what kind of world we want to live in and what needs to be done and what can be done to bring that world into being. And I think the two speakers are going to come at it differently, but they both are very strong on this question of morality and people approaching things from that perspective and getting at what kind of, can we be the kind of people who view horrors and stand aside hoping they don't hit us, or that we have to stand up and deal with those horrors. And then people can dig into different approaches to how to do that, because that's going to be presented in a very deep and thoroughgoing way with a lot of intellectual integrity and mutual respect.
All right, Carl, I want to let people know, too, that they're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Carl Dixon of Revolutionary Communist Party, David Zeiger, filmmaker, and Saskia Sassen, who's the Robert S. Lind Professor of Sociology and co-chair of the Committee on Global Thought at Columbia. And you're listening to it on KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And I want to move into talking with my other guests, but I want to, as part of that, I want to actually make the point, too, that, you know, people should know there was a host committee that came together around this event, and it brought together a remarkable group of people. And just to get, they've issued statements and supporting the dialogue, you know, including people who, like Alice Walker and Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. And then there's an actual host committee that contains a broad array of people, and it's really interesting. Ed Asner, William Ayers, Richard Brown, former Panther up in the San Francisco 8th defendant, Reverend Dr. Mary Kara, Peter Coyote, Annie Day, Emery Douglas, Carol Downer, Carl Hart, Aubrey Hendrix, you know, religious people involved, Raymond Latta, Reverend Cecil Murray is part of the host committee, Arturo O'Farrell, pianist, Matthew Shipp, who we've had on the show, musician and composer. It goes on and on and on, including people like who's had their loved ones killed by the police, people like Juanita Young and Nicholas Hayward, whose children were killed by the New York City Police Department, and Robert Young, a filmmaker, as well as my next two guests, David Zeiger and Saskia Sassen. Saskia, I want to talk to you first.
Yeah?
How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you.
good. Well, let's jump into this. What is it, you know, we've listened to what Carl was saying about this dialogue. What made you...
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
I loved what Carl was saying, yes.
Yeah. What made you want to be part of this?
Well, I mean, I have known Raymond Lotta for a long time. I've known, you know, I've spent many years in Chicago where that was, you know, there were quite a few people there who were interested in what Bob Avakian had to say. But Foundation, and I've known Cornel West. Cornel West and I have been in these strange settings, say in North Africa, where you had religious people from many, many different, religions. And so... What I like really about this dialogue is that it is not the typical dialogue, it is not the typical people, and it is not this very domesticated, careful mode of talking about where we are at and what we need. I think what both Cornel West and Bob Avakian are about is opening up new ground. We are in a disastrous situation. Our state, our liberal state is in severe decay, not just ours, by the way, all around. So I think we really need to focus on the extreme conditions that are often left out. We're always focusing on the middle, the median, the mean. We really need to focus at the edges, the horrors that are happening. And so I think that a more radical way of looking at where we're at, where there are no easy remedies, that sort of draws me. And each of them has a very strong category that organizes their thinking and their passions. And that is also very good. That's good theater even. You know, religion and revolution. I mean, can you ask for more?
Nope, that's good for me. here's a question for you, though. When you said not typical on all these different levels, can you talk about that a little bit more, what you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I just finished a book. This is not about my book now that I want to talk, but I want to say that in my book, I make an argument that we are always staying away from examining what all is getting expelled from our system, whether that is people who disappear in prisons forever or in displaced people's camps in the global south, whether that is all the long-term unemployed who are no longer counted. And so we say, oh, we have employment growth. Well, that's nice. But what would happen if we actually included all of those people who have been expelled from the system? We're seeing whole cities like Detroit expelled. So I think that we have reached a point where these processes that have been going on for quite a while have attained extreme conditions. The way we measure, the way we describe, we leave the extreme condition out. And I think we need to begin to focus on these extreme conditions. And so I think that both Cornel and Avakian are very radical thinkers. There are a lot of great thinkers and very nice thinkers. Mm-hmm. There are very few really radical ones. Now, I grew up in Latin America. You know, in Latin America, we're far more comfortable on some level with radicalisms of various sorts. So to me, this seems like a necessary type of conversation, and I'm surprised that it didn't happen much sooner in a way. Did I answer your question, or
yes,
in my own?
No, it was a great answer. It was a great answer. And, in fact, it led me to this, because it was one of the questions I was going to ask you, is that having looked at some of what you've done, you know, in your life, and the idea that your work, a lot of it gets focused up exactly around what you're saying, globalization, various forms of it, and the impact it has in the world. And,
yeah.
You know, that seems – so that has had a definite relationship between – you know, there's a definite relationship as you're talking between that and you deciding that you had to be part of this event. Is that true?
Well, absolutely. To me, this is a natural. Also, Raymond Lotta is very persuasive, you know. Because now we know that this is going to be a great event. When he started, maybe that there was also work to be done there. But I absolutely thought this was perfect. And I'm very glad that there are two other colleagues of mine at Columbia University. One is a professor of philosophy who are in the host committee. Even though, you know, it's not a Columbia University event, but it's great to have, since it's in the neighborhood, so to say, that we have this mix of people, you know, artists, militant, you know, workers, and profs.
Yeah.
The professors. I love that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Let me bring Dave Zeiger on and see what he has to say about all this. David, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me, Michael. I feel I feel very humbled in the wake of both your other guests. I feel kind of like there's a Peanuts cartoon where Linus and Charlie Brown are looking up the clouds, and Linus just says Charlie Brown says, "What do you see?" And Linus describes this in depth. Deep, Michelangelo painting that he sees, and then Charlie Brown says, "I see a ducky and a horsey."
We need that, you know. We need that.
Yeah, well, that's what I feel like.
Well, let's talk about this. What is it about this event that grabbed you?
Well, several things. I'm sorry, I forgot your name. From the professor.
Saskia.
You mentioned how that we're in disastrous times, and I feel that very, very deeply. And what's disastrous about it is not only what exists in the world, but also what doesn't exist in the world. And that's the thing that I'm constantly looking for and trying to find ways to connect with, which is exactly what you said. You know, not only a radical, but really a genuinely revolutionary, you know, a future that, you know, I myself have tremendous skepticism about the possibility of it just because of how disastrous the world is. But I know that there are very few people right now who are actually pointing in that direction and struggling to find the direction. And I know that Bob Avakian, the work that he's done, ultimately it's the only thing that can, you know, overcome, you know, the kind of the despair about the possibilities, because in order to get rid of this system, it has to be, a future, a different system. And I know that, I come out of the 60s, and I know that with the dramatic change, the coup in China and Mao's death, and since then, everything about what happened in the 60s in China and in revolution has been kind of pulverized in the media and in the public consciousness. The one person who's really been trying to struggling to learn the lessons from that and not lose the experiment that was very much a part of, or, you know, a beginning of, is Bob Avakian. And then on the other hand,
Cornell.
Cornell, Carl. You know, Cornell West is, you know, is, you know, from his perspective, is equally, you know, intolerant of anything that keeps this system going and keeps the way that, you know, the manifestations of it happening. And so I do think this is this is going to be a tremendous thing that this dialogue is happening, and that it's, you know, that it can, you know, move on in other things. You know, as a filmmaker, I've made one film about the 60s, the Sir No Sir, about the GI movement, and now I'm struggling to develop a film about the student movement. And I was talking to someone recently from Boston University, and she said the very first thing we did, like in 1964, was a teach-in that went all night on the campus, that thousands of students were there, and there were speakers from all over, and they stayed up all night, you know, struggling and debating and arguing. That kind of thing doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the kind of atmosphere, you know, about both, you know, strategy and also the big questions that everyone has. And this is something that I think is part of that tradition, and that's what's needed right now.
You know, as you wrote in your statement from as part of the host committee, you wrote something that really grabbed me, actually. You were posing a question to people broadly. You were saying, look, you know, if you want fundamental change, you're really going to have to look at fundamental questions, and that has everything to do with this dialogue. That was an extremely important point to be making, I think.
Yeah, everyone's heads, including, thousands of very progressive and even radical people, their heads get drawn down into who should be the next president, or, you know, how do we convince Obama to do something different than what he's doing? And, I mean, it just becomes this stranglehold. I won't name names, but it's someone who's very close to me who's been all very big on Obama and all of that. Her thing now is, I can't wait till he's not president anymore, because then he'll be able to do what he really wants to do. You know, and
yeah.
I mean, you're just in the mud there, and yeah, I mean, it's the fundamental questions that actually change things. You know, it's those big questions about how the world is and what philosophy is about that actually, you know, make it possible to get out of that kind of.
I also think, you know, when you look at history, which is something that I really like to do. No formal system of power has lasted forever. So we tend to think that what else is there, you know, where we're at now? I mean, it's almost unimaginable. But we've got to get out of the system we're in now. Now, I am for markets, but the Adam Smith market, which is a people's market, you know, like the market square in the small town, not for this extraordinary so-called market system that you have in finance. That's not market. That's deployment of power, absorption of all resources. It is an extremely abusive. I don't know if anybody picked up on this fact that many of us already knew because of Freedom of Information Act, but that the Fed secretly transferred over $10 trillion to the global banking system. That was our money. While they were debating TARP in Congress, the Fed was just taking, you know, far, far much more out directly to redistribute among the banks. Of course, now they cannot afford, you know, housing for the poor and all of that. I mean, this is truly a decaying system. No matter who the president is, you know, it doesn't matter, really, I think. Mm-hmm. So something has to change. And I don't know what the form. I wouldn't want a militarized change, of course, but something really has to change radically. Because we're on self-destruct mode. It's going to hit more and more people eventually.
Okay.
We can see that in the impoverishment of the middle classes. You know, these middle classes that thought they had it made, more or less, and now their sons and daughters are poorer than they are, etc. So this is an indication that this is truly a process of decay, of losses.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with three members of the host committee for an upcoming dialogue in New York City at Riverside Church on November 15th. And the dialogue is between Cornel West and Bob Avakian, and it's titled Revolution and Religion, the Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. All right, and that's something that, and actually our guests are, it's Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party, David Zeiger, filmmaker, and Saskia Sassen, the Robert S. Lynn Professor of Sociology and the co-chair of the Committee on Global Thought at Columbia University. And they're all members of the host committee for this event. Now, Carl, let me ask you this. One of the things that I've seen, and when I've talked to people, I've been going out broadly with this, and when I've talked to people, that the topic of it, revolution and religion, you know, that is something that a lot of people zero in on. Let's, you know, and they comment that that's something they really feel a need to dig into, that relationship.
Yeah.
Why this topic as opposed to any other?
I think that this topic is, one, it's very timely, and it is something that is literally a matter of great concern for hundreds of millions, if not billions of people around the world. You know, because a lot of people go at it in terms of, well, how can humanity be good without God? You know, we need an external force to set moral standards, or otherwise there would just be chaos and all this kind of stuff. And then you have people grappling with, well, can religion be a motivator to take on social injustice? And then other people who say, well, it's really a fetter. So there's really a lot of questioning and grappling with this. And then the other thing that I think is very important about it is the approach of both of these speakers, because, like I said before, morality is going to be a big part of what they get into, but it really does come down to what kind of people are we going to be and what kind of world we want to live in and the relationship between that in terms of the role of people in acting to bring that world into being. And I think another reason that that's timely, however you look at religion, there are a lot of people who are now beginning to wonder and some beginning to act on doing something about these horrors, who need to lift their sights and to look more at, well, what can be done to get out from under this stuff, not how do we, you know, make some changes within an overall setup that is itself the problem, but how do we, is there another framework within which humanity could live? Is there another kind of world that could really be brought into being? And what would need to be done to do that? And that's something that I think people will get a very rich exchange on, because Avakian, of course, comes from a whole new framework of what that world could be like, how to bring it into being, the process for that, the strategic approach. And the Cornell has a burning, you know, desire to see people not become, as he puts it, adapted to indifference or adjusted to injustice. And that, and the love for humanity, and especially for, as he puts it, the least of these, motivates him in everything he goes. So I think this topic with these two speakers is really going to be something that is illuminating for a lot of people and will lead people to think more deeply about this and to think about their own role in relation to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that point about this is a topic that is really a burning question for hundreds of millions, billions of people around the world. You know, you think about this and what they're confronting. And I, one of the things I was really, you know, I was really excited about was, you know, a lot of times when a dialogue like this happens, there's a certain audience that is drawn in, which is an important audience. But in this one in particular, there seems to be as well a broader outreach to people, including a lot of people who are never really invited into these things or don't feel welcome into these things. That's the people that live on the bottom of society. Go ahead, Saskia.
Can I just wanted to add something on the religion question.
Sure.
So I teach a lot of, I teach this very, very large, almost 300 students who I hope will all go, undergrad. This is my undergrad lecture class at Columbia. And, you know, for these young, very smart students, which come from all fields, physics, history, you name it, you know, both of these terms, religion and a revolution, are variables. On the one hand, some good things, in the middle it's wobbly, and at the other extreme it's really bad. So for them, it's actually a questioning, what are we talking about when we say religion? It's not necessarily a positive. And the same thing with revolution, because they think of ISIS, well, that's a revolutionary movement, they don't like it, right? So for them, these young minds who are very inquisitive minds, they're very smart. For them, it is also an opportunity to think, along with two sharp speakers, about the meanings. These are very, very both complex but also very ambiguous terms, concepts for these young students. So I think that that's an added value, and that is also how I am sort of trying to persuade them, you know, to come to this event.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carl, right before we will move on to Dave in a minute, but right before that, I did want to hear a little bit about your thinking on this really important effort to reach out to people who aren't normally brought into this.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we really want to do on this, because I made a point about the high level at which both of these speakers go into things, but also the way in which they're motivated by concern for those on the bottom and work to reach out to those on the bottom, you know, because they want to bring this to people who catch the hardest hell in this society. They want to bring them in, and we're doing efforts, you know, like we're working on transportation to bring people from different parts of the East Coast and the Midwest.
Oh, that's
to
great.
New York City for this. But we're also working on a bus to go from Harlem over to Riverside, which is not that great a distance, but there's a big gap between Riverside Church and the people in the projects in Harlem. And we want to bring people together to cross that gap together, make people feel welcome and that this is for them. And then even some of the statements about the dialogue, the letter from the ex-prisoner talking about why he's excited about this dialogue and why he wants to be a part of it. We're really trying to work to bring people who are usually left out of intellectual discourse and even told that they don't have the wherewithal and the capability to be a part of it, to bring them in and let them be involved and let them also experience this discussion over new frameworks, new ways the world could be, and what kind of people we need to be to help bring that into being.
Mm-hmm. David, What's your take on this whole point about the centrality of this question of religion, revolution, its meaning in the world? What, you know, what's your take on that?
Well, it's both. Well, certainly, I mean, the religion has become in the last 10, 15 years such a massive point, a massive, you know, kind of a lightning rod on every level. But what's missing, even on religion, what's missing is the you know, in any kind of visible way, is the kind of religion that Cornel West represents. You know, the you know, I mean, I'm an atheist myself.
Me too.
Yeah, I connect with, I connect a lot with the Carl. You too. I can connect a lot with the sentiment and the concept, you know, of you know, spirituality that Cornel West represents, and out there in the world, you know, it's there's almost anything but. And so, you know, it's a obviously a complicated issue, but one thing is something that everyone you know, wrangles with in their own mind and in their community and in their life. I mean, it's putting it on the level that this debate is putting it on is, like you said earlier, it's quite a revelatory thing, because that's not how people think about either religion or revolution at this point. But it's also connecting with something that people are dealing with every day in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just say this. We have about maybe 6 minutes left, and I want to basically get to this question, all right? And it's something that I think for all three of you. And Saskia, maybe you first. I was reading the statement from one of the host committee members that really it sort of made me think a lot, and it was from Carol Downer, who's an attorney here in Los Angeles, and she's also with the founder of the Feminist Women's Health Center. And she made a point that she was, you know, she talked about how the kind of discourse that goes on in society today is not only not appealing, it's just, you know, hard for people to take. And yeah. So consequently, not a lot of it is paid attention to, or taken, people don't take part in it. But she said about this, that one of the things she was looking forward to was that, you know, that there would be, it was around setting new standards in a sense, of fundamental questions with principled discourse around them. And I wanted to ask you, what do you hope that is achieved by this dialogue? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Carol Downer really nailed it down. I think that is a very, very good way of putting it, that we really lack. We lack language. We lack imagery of what our alternatives. It's much easier today to just be a critic like I am. You know, you can demolish one thing after the other and show how bad they are or how whatever, but how without promise. But to actually construct an alternative sort of set of images and points, you know, short phrases that capture. Cornel is a master at this. I've been enough times with him to see that he's very, very good. You know, just give, I mean, language, especially if it's short sentences or images, visual images also, that those are tools, those are instruments that have their own impact. They make you think differently. They make you see stuff that you hadn't thought about. And from where I look at things now, I'm my passion is documenting all the things that we don't see. Either statistically we don't see them, we don't see them with our eyes, even if we're standing in front of them, we don't see a lot of stuff. So to me this, and then I add to that again what I said about my students, for whom both of these terms are very wobbly. They don't know what to do with it. They're really interested, however, as I think Dave said, to know that these are foundational elements in our lives. So I sort of see this mix of providing images and language to people who know that things are really wrong but who cannot know how to sort of talk about it almost. And the other one is some clarifications on the question of religion. Again, what was said about Cornell, it's really a kind of spirituality. This is not religion as dogma. This is another dimension that is part of all, that is part of our humanity. It goes beyond believing or not in some God, right? So I think that this is really a very powerful and promising combination, these two.
And I think, you know, it's really true, this point about that's been made a couple places in some of the writings about this dialogue, about this is actually touching on a question, the deepest questions of what it means to be human, and modeling a different approach. And let me, Dave, do you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I see a ducky and a horsey. not really.
All right. Carl, what about you?
I guess what I would say is two things. One is, I think that people who come to this dialogue will experience an approach to getting into deep and very fundamental questions about the way the world is and does it need to be that way, and that people will come off of this really reflecting deeply on, again, like I said earlier, what kind of people we want to be and what kind of world we want to live in and our role in realizing that world. But also, this goes back to something that Dave raised about what's missing in the political scene today, this question of there is a different way and there really is a way to bring that into being in terms of revolution and a strategic approach to that, being more out there on the scene. And I think that's something that's also going to happen off of this dialogue, both with the people who are in the house to experience it, also at the simulcast in Los Angeles. But then in other ways, the fact that this is happening and people are hearing that it's happening, and then they're going to want to, well, is there any...
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all of that. Right. Yeah.
So that's it. That's okay. What I think.
All right. Did you have more you wanted to add, Saskia?
No, I'm fine. Okay. I didn't say it all, but I said enough.
Okay. All right. I want to thank all of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Sure,
for having us on.
That was great. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. And you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with three members of the host committee for the upcoming dialogue between Cornel West and Bob Avakian. And it's called Revolution and Religion, the Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. And it's Bob Cornel West and Bob Avakian live and in person November 15th, 2014 at 3 to 7 p.m. in Riverside Church in New York City.